Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. It's Joe George, assistant to the regional manager behind the glass, and it is a Monday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Hope all of you had a great weekend. Hope all of you had a better weekend than the Houston Astros had, dropping 2 of 3 in Seattle, dropping down to 500 on the season, now 17-17, and begin a test in Anaheim later tonight. Pitching matchup tomorrow, Framber Valdez versus Shohei Ohtani.
That ain't bad.
Excited. I'm more excited for tomorrow's game than I am tonight's game, even though I love watching Hunter Brown pitch. So I am excited for tonight's game. We like to do this on Monday, the good, the bad, the ugly, because it's a good way to kind of talk about a series, a good way to kind of talk about 3 games, kind of summarize the good, the bad, and ugly. And because the Killer Bees are always super positive, we are huge positive. We're a positive pairing. We're a positive duo. We are definitely the glass is half full whenever you look at the landscape of Houston sports radio. We are always looking at the positive side of things. Joe, you agree, right? You agree with this?
Yeah, definitely.
Listeners agree with this. Twitch, you agree? Twitch.tv/ESPN975. Listeners, Hive, y'all agree, right? 713-780-3776.
Positive Jeremy.
So we'll start with the,
positive vibes only.
Oh, I am a positive vibe.
That's a different show, Joe.
I am a positive vibe.
Who says that?
That's a different guy on a different show, Joe.
Oh, is that a real thing?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that.
It's a promo.
Oh, really?
It's in the open to the show.
On our show?
No.
Or our station, I mean?
Yep.
Oh, well, then who is it?
Is it Paulie?
Why can't we talk about people at our own station?
Did you hear what he just said?
Is it Jake?
There you go.
I must have missed that.
In every open of every show, it's positive vibes, positive vibes.
Really?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yep.
I did not know that. Yep. You listen to them more than I do, I guess.
I have to.
Even though somehow
home.
I'm better at who said it than you are. Anyways, let's start off with the positive. I know that it wasn't the best of weekends. You dropped 2 of 3. I know there's some bad to get to, and we will. Look, we're also very fair on the Killer Bees. We're kind of realists, really, on the Killer Bees. And we'll get to the ugly as well. But let's start off with the good. What good do you have from the Astros series loss to Seattle against the Mariners?
I mean, I think about it from two different ways. One, Yordan Alvarez just cannot stop just demolishing baseballs against the Seattle Mariners, which I love. And J.P. France, to me, wasn't great by any means, but 5 shutout innings in his first ever major league start was something I thought was really good because Brandon Belak wasn't really good. So the fact that you know you're going to have jobs, spots to fill and jobs that have to be replaced in the starting rotation to get 5 scoreless innings from J.P. France, I'll take that. I think that, you know, from the standpoint of 2 of the 3 starts, I think obviously you got a really good start from Javier as well. But I'll take the J.P. France start as a huge positive.
Yeah, that was my my headline on my good too was J.P. France. Like, J.P. France was pretty exciting in the sense of like his Sugarland numbers before we saw him pitch in Seattle. It's like, okay, let's see what this guy's got. I remember watching him pitch in college at Tulane before he transferred to Mississippi State in his graduate senior year. So I was excited to see him pitch.
Did he ever catch your eye?
What he got? J.P. France?
Yeah,
I mean, he was part of the weekend rotation. Yeah, he was good. He was really good.
Because they had said that he kind of was always trying to reinvent himself to take the next step. And I'm just curious.
Whenever I saw him, he wasn't like oozing big leaguer to me. But he was a really good college pitcher.
Gotcha.
So I was excited to watch him. And then to see him like kind of grind through 5 shutout innings. I thought there was a lot of good there. I don't know how he couldn't be pleased with J.P. France. And I'm excited to see J.P. France start again. I'm okay and even excited a little bit about J.P. France being part of this rotation for the next couple of months at least. So I consider JP France as a positive. What positives did you have, Joe George? I have a couple of more I want to get to before we start looking at the bad and the ugly.
Kyle Tucker, a good weekend again.
He broke out of a slump.
Yeah, mm-hmm. For sure. I wish he just – this glove, no glove thing we've been doing for two seasons now is annoying.
But why does that bother you?
I don't know why.
Why do you care about his gloves?
We're back on the gloves now. It's like – but it's so baseball that like, oh, I'm struggling. I got to take my gloves off. Like, it's baseball 101.
But baseball's all superstitious.
It was kind of chilly, too, in Seattle.
But like, and Jake Myers, man. Like, he just continues to play really strong, good baseball. Like, is it elite center field?
Uh-huh.
No. Like, but he had a great defensive play. It was on Saturday, the throw out at second.
But you're showing off that cannon.
Like, he's hitting the ball well again. Like, it's just, he's Jake Myers is your everyday center fielder.
That was my second good. My second, ooh, that's a bold statement there. Ooh, you just kind of casually dropped there at the end.
I don't think it's casual.
What was it at the end?
That he's your everyday center fielder.
That we talked about this on Friday. Like, Chaz McCormick, I think, should only be playing now when there's a lefty on the mound.
I have a solution to that, but not yet. Mine was similar with Jake Myers. It wasn't quite what you said. It was a little different. Jake Myers emerging into one of the top defensive center fielders in baseball. You look at the analytics of like defense, and I'm not going to bore you with the details, but you know, defensive war, some of the fan graphs, zone metrics, stuff like that. Jake Myers is amongst the top defensive center fielders in all of baseball. So I think that's great. I mean, you have one of the better defensive center fielders in all of baseball. He hits a little bit too. Like, he had this little stint because he's been playing every single day where he's starting to hit the baseball. But the fact that you look at Jake Myers and you know that you have one of the top defensive center fielders in baseball is a positive for the Houston Astros.
I think the biggest positive is because of what we were dealing with previous to that, about wondering if he could ever get back to where he was, both at the plate and in the outfield. Being able to erase the mental blocks that looked like every time he got near a warning track or had to dive, that everybody held their collective breath and he looked like he was completely out of place and very, very scared and tentative. He's looked like he's gotten over that. And that's those were the two big hurdles, no matter what we were going to see, because the bigger question was, because he hit like when he first came up. Would he have the power that he suddenly got when he first came up? None of that was as relevant as just could he get over the fact that it looked like he was a deer in the headlights at the plate, and he looked like he was completely scared to death running the outfield.
Yeah, there was a couple times where he looked scared to death in the outfield. I don't know if that continued more than like a week, but definitely at the plate, he just looked completely overmatched.
I think there was I would say it was more than a week, and I think it carried over because it was two different things. It was one when he was coming in and diving and then stretching out both rotators and wondering if he'd hurt himself, and the other thing was when he went back to the wall or the track, but for whatever the case and however long it took, thank goodness it looks like he's over that. But I think that the other thing, too, was he was pressing because he knew suddenly the clock was ticking on him, that especially when Click was gone, that you know there was no guarantees he was going to be the center fielder of the future and that people could see that he was a shell of himself, and he found it. So thankful for that, because that was the Astros obviously have sorely needed him this year.
I think there's a lot to do with the fact that he wasn't like pressing for his job. Like, whenever Chaz was healthy, you know, last season and then at the start of this season, like, there's been a battle going on between who wins the center field job. And I don't love that Jake Myers seems to have kind of like shrunk in the moment when he's competing for a job. It's not, you know, where I really want in my athletes, where they're kind of shying away from the moment. I don't love that. But as soon as Chaz went on the injured list, Jake Myers has taken off. And I do think that there is something to the fact that he knows that he's going to be in the lineup every day. Well, it's not in the back of his mind that if he goes 0-for-4, two strikeouts, he's sitting the next day. So he can get comfortable. He has the freedom and he has like all of the confidence that he's going to be in the lineup day in, day out.
That's kind of what I was alluding to, too. Like, he didn't feel like the pressure. He knew when remember the conversation you and I had when Chaz went out, was like, just play him every day just to see what he's got. Can he do it?
Yeah, you weren't a big fan of that, though.
I wasn't. But I was like, because I was almost done with him already.
Yeah. Because a lot of Houston was.
Yeah, because of the entire combination of, you know, offense and defense and what you were seeing. And so you were the one that said, just put him out there and play him. And when we had the discussion, it was like, you just got to figure out what he's going to be going forward. Because we spent too much time hoping we got the old Jake Myers back. And it was, you know, a multitude of injuries that caused all these different bad looks.
Let him fail or let him succeed.
I think we're both on to something in the fact that once he realized that he got that kind of target off his back that everybody was looking to kind of crap on him, he relaxed and got back to playing baseball again.
Yeah. You have some more goods? I have one more I want to get to, but it's not a great one. So I'll allow you all the freedom like Dusty's allowing Jake Myers right now.
I mean, I was going to say overall that the front part of the rotation to me, the top two guys, I don't think have disappointed. I thought really Fromber was headed for a bigger fall off from last year than he actually was, and he's really impressed me in the fact that he's kind of picked up where he left off and he's looked really good. And Javier, to me, again, his fastball might be a little slower, but it still seems to be as unhittable. And I think those two guys at the top of the rotation, moving on from Verlander, are still huge positives for me. I think they're very good.
Yeah, I'll include Javier. I think that we unfairly set the bar too high for his new song on Friday. But he struck
out. You were close.
I thought he was
kidding. I texted you guys when he was like through four innings with like seven or eight Ks. I'm like, yeah. Oh my God, he might get
there. I was like, we're going to get 10 Ks. Like, this is going to be a call your shot moment.
I was DVRing the Astros that night, so I muted notifications on that group chat.
Yeah, but like,
I was out of there in a hurry.
Yeah, Javier was nasty again Friday night. Like, that's what's been so impressive. Like, he just doesn't have his best stuff, but he's still so good.
Yeah. What is your good over the weekend, Houston? 713-780-ESPN. Because the Killer Bees are just, you know, we're a role model of positivity. 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man-Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Also, look, we're fair, too. We got to give the bad and we have to give the ugly and maybe a little bit more of that than the good. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN97.5 and ESPN92.5.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. What was the good? What was the bad? What was the ugly for the series in Seattle? 713-780-3776. Eric the Driver says good. The outfield, that's a pretty good call. I like the way that you phrase that. The bad, the pitching, I don't know if you can go that far. Javier was good. France was good. Belak got hit, but he actually didn't give up tons of runs.
He kept you in it.
The pitching was really only bad in that eighth inning, which we'll get to, I'm sure, here in a second. The ugly was Scott Service. I cannot stand Scott Service. And I hate saying that about a former Astro, but I cannot stand Scott Service.
Yeah, I get tired of all of his antics and the fact that he tries to make it, you know, bigger than it is and about him as much as anything and all the stuff that he pulls. And I grew up playing against him, and I played against him in college. And
what was he for you? What was he against your lifetime? Like 7 for 10?
No, I don't think
a couple
of
dongs?
So. I don't believe so. He was never really known as a bat. He was a really, really good backstop. Damian Miller, another one of those guys that never I grew up playing against. That
never heard of Damian Miller.
Damian Miller got a World Series ring with the Diamondbacks, and he played in the league for a long time. But Service, yeah, I'm with you. It gets old, and then you got some dude that's in his first 30 games in Major League Baseball, and suddenly he's about that life, and he wants to fight Maldi, and the bench is clearing and all that crap, too. Yeah, you missed me with all that. Again, it was another Mariners World Series that the Astros said was a series in May. But that's how the Mariners and their fans treat it.
I liked it. I'm curious to see if the Astros are going on a little bit of a run here because they were fired up. Like, I was hoping they would come back and win that game and then go on a run because, like, something woke them up. Obviously, they didn't win yesterday, but maybe that run starts today. I kind of like the benches clearing. I'm not going to lie. I like a little drama, especially in early May.
I found it very funny that J-Rod was all about that life until Yordan was in the picture, and then he kept making sure there were three people between him and Yordan.
I mean, yeah.
Lance McCullers was the first one out there.
Of course he was.
In his ponytail.
But like, Lance looked a little jacked when they showed him throwing off the mound and everything like that. Like, Lance's dry fit was probably a little too medium-ish, but it looks like at least...
I mean, it's probably intentional.
Probably right.
But, like, look, if you, like, line up all of Major League Baseball, say, you're going to fight this guy... Yordan Alvarez is probably the last guy you want to see.
Yeah.
It's the Incredible Hulk.
Yeah, he's...
Like, it's Hulk smash. Like, he's going to destroy you. Like, he's
bigger
than...
Like, as tall as Aaron Judge is, there's no contest between the two of them. You want no part of Yordan.
Yeah, Judge got the reach, but, like, Yordan, one body blow, you're dead.
You might be able to sneak Mauricio Dubon, though, in between the gap and Aaron Judge's teeth. Might be able to do that. So Aaron Judge does have that going for him. He looks like a villain. He does. And he wears the Yankee gear. He's the evil empire. What was your bad, Blankers?
My bad is, I mean, I was torn between bad and ugly. My bad, I guess, is going to be Alex Bregman. It's harder every day. And thank God for him that Abreu's on this team. Because since we even started talking about it a week ago, it's gotten worse. I mean, it just looks like, again, it's the no fun zone. There's none of the brashness and the cockiness, and there's nothing to be brash or cocky about. He just looks like he's completely, you know, a different person in the batter's box. And it, I hate to say it, but it looks like there's a whole lot of almost I don't care on some of these at-bats. And even calls that he would, that you know, when they were given the corners the last two games of the series, normally he'd be at least having discussions with the home plate umpire. And now he was just taking his bat and going home. I'm like, he looks deflated. He looks defeated. And that worries me.
He's playing like his salsa taste. Do you see his batting average today, by the way? 195.
Yeah, it went under two bills
under
yesterday.
The Mendoza line for a guy that's hitting in the middle of your order.
Yeah, can I just jump on that then?
Of course.
My bad's Dusty Baker. Because you make a decision to fix Jeremy Pena and move him to the two hole, and it works. And then all of a sudden, you take him out of it, and you put a guy who's now below the Mendoza line batting that high up, like on a consistent basis. Like you got it to work.
Yeah.
Like, why are you changing it? I just don't. And then Jose Abreu.
I trust Dusty Baker, though. He's a World Series winning manager, 2,000 wins. I've always trusted Dusty Baker.
Just,
I don't criticize Dusty Baker in the regular season, ever.
Ever again.
No, ever. And anything that has been said negatively about Dusty Baker in the regular season out of my mouth, I will lie and deny till
I
die.
That's what I thought. Okay.
And I got nothing for you, Jose Abreu.
That's like, my ugly.
I don't even know if we can talk about Jose Abreu anymore.
I mean, that's my ugly.
I got nothing for you, man.
Jose Abreu is becoming a sunk cost. Like, that's where we're at with Jose Abreu. So, yeah, between Abreu and Bregman, and that's to your point about Dusty Baker, is that Bregman's under the Mendoza line. Jose Abreu can't hit the ball out of his shadow, and those guys are getting significant at-bats on your team. They're in the middle of your lineup. So, yeah, I understand your criticism of Dusty, but it ain't coming from me. My bat's pretty much the entire offense. Like, you get nothing from the catcher position. Martin Maldonado's been an offensive liability for the last few years.
This weekend.
He's swinging it good for Martin Maldonado.
Yeah.
Still an offensive liability. Yiner Diaz can't get into any sort of groove, any sort of rhythm. I do like that he caught J.P. France. Hopefully that continues going forward. That means he can start 40% of the games. Jose Abreu. Joe just mentioned him. You're getting nothing out of first base when you need to get something out of first base. Jose Abreu right now is an overpriced Yuli Gurriel that's not producing as good as Yuli Gurriel, that doesn't have the contact of Yuli Gurriel, and can't defend like Yuli Gurriel. This is coming out of my mouth, like the Yuli hater last year. And Jose Abreu is giving you not even close to Yuli Gurriel production. It is sad. Mauricio Dubon at second base, like, look, he's a fine utility player. He's starting to show us why he's not an everyday player on a winning team. Pena's fine at short. Pena is who he is. We just mentioned Bregman hitting under the Mendoza line. Myers is fine, but is kind of plateaued. Yordan Alvarez is not getting anything to hit because he has Jose Abreu behind him. And Kyle Tucker finally came out of the slump a little bit. But the offense right now is bad. It's really bad for the Houston Astros.
Yeah, look, my ugly is Abreu. I mean, as bad as Bregman's been, Abreu, to me, because of the money you paid him, the amount of years you gave him, and the attention it got when you signed him, it's an ugly, ugly look. And I was talking to some of my buddies this morning. I said, look, I mean, the one thing where he's never going to give money back or feel too bad and he's not going to walk away from the game is he's got 20 million reasons to stick with this for the next 3 years. It's just Astros fans and the team itself is going to possibly have to stomach all of it. You hope it's a slow start. You hope he snaps out of it. But with every at-bat, you watch him at the plate and you go, yeah, no, that doesn't look like a really above-average major league hitter. There's no pop. It just looks like, again, another guy that looks like he's pressing, but it also looks like he's kind of defeated. I mean, I was encouraged when I heard the guys talking about the fact that, you know, that he spent a bunch of time in the cage with Yordan, and they were talking and they were working on things. And I was like, maybe he'll find some power source. Maybe he'll get his legs back involved and change something in his swing. He's overmatched by fastballs. Like, they're just gassing him up fastballs in the zone, and he's got zero clue of getting it to it.
Yeah, he had the double in the gap in right center yesterday on a fastball, like in the upper 90s. So hopefully that can get some sort of confidence.
But then later in the
game,
he just got dusted by a 94.
Yeah, hit into that double play, which wasn't great because Yordan got a leadoff single, and it's like, okay, here you go. You got the tying run on base, or tying run at the plate, and double play, and that lasted for about all of a second. So, yeah, that is the ugly, no doubt about it. I have in my ugly Bregman anytime he swings the bat. Because right now I'm rooting for Alex Bregman to literally not swing the bat. Because he's still getting on base at a decent clip. Like 322 on base isn't awful. He's one of the leaders in baseball in walks. He's like in the top five. So like, the play discipline's still there. Like, at least Alex Bregman's not chasing. But I'm rooting for the bat not to come off his shoulder. Because when the bat comes off his shoulder, he also can't get the ball out of his shadow. And he's hitting under 200. So I've been rooting in Alex Bregman plate appearances that he literally does not swing. I would be excited if Alex Bregman went to the plate without a bat in his hand. That way he can't swing. That way he can't swing. He could potentially draw the walk because when he swings, he has a 195 batting average with a 320 slugging. It's awful.
I don't know if he's dropping the back shoulder or what, but he's popping up a ton of pitches,
too. He's trying to hit everything out of the park.
Yeah, it's just, again, there's so much going on there. You'd love to be in a situation where both guys need to sit down for a day or two and just kind of recharge the batteries and relax. But based on how bad the offense has been, to your point, you really can't afford to do that right now until you get some of the guys back and you get more to a regular everyday lineup that you thought you were going to have. You need these guys in there because the guys behind him aren't exactly swinging a big stick either.
Yeah, and then my final ugly, I'm surprised it's taken us this long to get to it, was the eighth inning in game two.
Oh,
like, there's a lot of feelings right now about the Astros in the city. It's like, I mean, we all, I think, in the city think the Astros are going to figure it out. I don't think even the most negative people think that the Astros are going to miss the playoffs. We certainly don't think that, or at least I don't. I don't want to speak for y'all. So, like, it's just kind of like we're going through a little bit of not experiencing the great Astro baseball that we normally see kind of year in, year out. Although the Astros don't always start out great in the month of April. But if the Astros win game two and they lose yesterday, we have a much different feeling in this city.
We do.
And they were an out away from winning. Well, yeah, I mean, I know they would have had the bottom of the ninth, but they were an out away from getting out of the bottom of the eighth inning. And that was my ugly. Like,
yeah,
that to me was just, it wasn't bad to me, though. It was just like, this is baseball. Nickel and dime to death. Really, really ugly in the bottom of the eighth.
Hasn't happened since 1901.
Ridiculous.
Seven runs with two outs.
I mean,
first of all, it's why I also love baseball, because like at any moment you can go to game and see something that's like never been done before.
You see something new every day.
It sucks when it happens to you, though.
Yeah.
Like, and the Astros just got worked.
It's just, I didn't want to overreact. And I know it's early in the season. But those are the kind of games, and you know, because we've talked about this even from the times when I was with the Rockets, I used to keep track of the games that they had basically wrapped up that they let get away. And then at a certain point when they stack up at the end of the year, you look at it and say, well, you know, we missed this spot by this many games, but look at how many games we gave away. That one last night, that one Saturday night, it was tough for me to go to bed that night. I lost sleep going, that just doesn't happen. Two outs in the eighth inning.
I'm going to worry about you a little bit if that costs you some sleep.
It just bothers me. I hate losing games like that you had in your back pocket. Three-run lead, nobody on, two outs. You should be wrapping that game up.
Yeah.
And instead, you find yourself with a dam breaks, and you're just completely deluged by water, and you're drowning, and you lose. And I'm going, my God, that's a game that, to your point, my big thing was you would already have clinched the World Series of the Mariners World Series of May.
The Seattle Spring Classic.
Yep. You would have had the Spring Classic in your back pocket no matter what happened with Belak. You'd have been in a really good position to start. I tweeted it. You know, you start the road trip with two straight wins against a divisional opponent.
At Pac-Man Joel.
They build it up as, you know, their World Series every time you play them. Everything would have been going. You got a great start from France. And instead, here you are licking your wounds going, damn, what the hell just happened?
I was gutted for France, honestly.
I wish
France would have won that game. That bothered me more than the Astros losing, that France didn't get the win in that
first
game.
Because
that would have been cool. That would have been cool. But that eighth inning was just annoying. Like, a lot of people were banging on Rafael Montero, and I get it. Like, he got
paid
a huge contract. Yeah. He was coming. But you look at that inning, like, what did Montero really – it wasn't all that bad for Montero. Now, I hate walks. I hate two-out walks. I hate two-out walks with a three-run lead. So shame on you, Rafael Montero, for allowing that two-out walk. Cannot stand that. But he gave up two infield singles. Like, the one was the slow roller by the mound, which if he's a decent fielder, he's able to field that, by the way.
He did get right by him.
Yeah, he probably should have had that. And then there's, like, the huge controversy. Well, who should have been first to the ball, Peña or Bregman? In my opinion, that's an all-or-nothing play. Like, that's a do-or-die play. Whoever gets there first, that's their ball.
And I don't know that – I think it would be a really, really close play at first base anyway. I don't know that he would have got him.
Same thing. Like, I don't even think they would have got him. That next play, though, by the way, another slow roller, another infield single. Like, Montero induced two slow-rolling ground balls, should have been out of the inning, both times. And I know it would have been a good play for Alex Bregman to make the catch at third base. I thought Alex Bregman should have made the catch at third base. Like, he's backpedaling onto the bag. He totally whiffs on the ball. Like,
little alligator arm.
He's just super unathletic. Like, he is super unathletic. And I know it would have been a good play. maybe even a great play for Bregman to catch that ball with Pena going into the hole. The only play was at third base.
The only play Pena had.
I felt Bregman should have caught that ball. Like, that's the one that we're kind of overlooking. And again, good to great play. But I bet you Bregman would have told you he should have made it.
But you also know his thinking is, I'm about to get barrel rolled because either my knee.
The game's on the line.
I know. And it's the only play Pena, it's the only play he can make is to go to third. But it's like death by a thousand paper cuts because it was like, you know, this little nickel and dimer and this little play and this slow roller. And then suddenly, all of a sudden, the floodgates open up and then Ryan Stanek throws gasoline on a bonfire and we've got a towering inferno. And you're like, oh, my God, that hurts.
Yeah, Stanek pitched way worse in that inning than Montero did. Mm-hmm. Now, Montero then gave up, you know, the base clearing double into the gap, which wasn't great either. But should have been out of that inning twice. I hate that walk. Bregman, make that play if you're a pitcher.
I like that there was no quit. At least they got two more runs on the board in the ninth. Yeah. But obviously, they were meaningless.
What's your good? What's your bad? What's your ugly from the weekend, Hive? 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Also, we spent a little bit of time talking about J.P. France, right? We just talked about J.P. France for a moment, making his big league debut. Looked really good. Five shutout innings for the Houston Astros, but couldn't pick up the victory. We also saw Brandon Belak yesterday. If you had to pick one that you're more confident in, because it looks like both of them are going to be part of the rotation here for the Astros for a little bit, who do you have more confidence in? Is it Brandon Belak or is it J.P. France? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. One thing that I have tremendous confidence is in Pro Dunk Hoops. They have the best basketball goals on the planet. And I also have confidence that if you had one of these things, you would love it, whether it's for you and you like to shoot some hoops or whether it's for your kids who like to play some basketball as well. They'll love it as well. They make the highest quality basketball goals that you'll find. I was driving through the neighborhood the other day and I saw some cheap basketball goals. Some of them were down on the concrete. The rim was all bent up. The backboard was broken. They needed a goal from Pro Dunk because none of that stuff would happen because they have the best on the market. Tempered glass backboard, breakaway rim, thick steel pole, stainless steel hardware, and it's height adjustable anywhere from 5 feet all the way up to 10 feet. Have a little slam dunk competition if you would like. Also, their accessories are next level. LED light kits for night play. Look, we understand that you're not home during the day. We understand that it gets a little warm in Houston this time of year. And you only want to be outside at night. Well, the LED light kits can allow for that. Backstop nets, pole pad lettering, lots more with Pro Dunk. You can order everything, including professional installation online. Yeah, the pros at Pro Dunk professionally install your goal at the perfect height, perfectly straight, perfectly level. You can't screw it up because they're doing the work for you. Let the pros at Pro Dunk do all of that for you today. Call right now, 281-351-9822, and visit ProDunk.com. That's ProDunk.com.
All teams covered, no talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Asking you about the good, the bad, the ugly. Eric the driver said Scott Service. Well, Bear said Scott Service is such a bitter beer face guy. Alternately, Aaron Boone is always baby whiny lips. So which former Astro is more disliked? Fires not included. Ooh. I think I dislike Service more than Boone.
Oh, I think so, too.
I dislike Service more than Boone. Honestly,
I don't know that they've had, like, I don't know if you caught this or not, but I was flipping channels and caught, and I was watching the Tampa Yankees series a little bit because I always want to see the Yankees lose.
I think I'm going to try to make it out to some Rays games in a couple weeks when I'm there in Clearwater.
Tell me how bad, yeah.
They're playing the Blue Jays that week.
Oh, that's a good matchup. Yeah. I'd like to see, I'd be interested in your feedback on what a big dump that place
Oh,
is.
I've been there.
Okay.
It's like a library. That place is awful.
Is it?
It's terrible.
But I was watching
The Astrodome would be better.
And there was three separate plays where even the broadcasters doing the game had to call out. And you know how sometimes, you know, Blummer will say, "Well, I'll tell you what, those calls right there." But they blatantly came out at one point and said, "Does any other team in the league get calls like this?" Like, it's understandable that the umpires are having maybe a rough night or, you know, saying they're not calling this pitch or that pitch. How in the world is it that they're not calling it for us, but every single thing for them, every call's going their way? And then there was a back and forth with hit with like warnings and stuff like that. And it wasn't even for pitching. There was again kind of like the dust up in the Astros game with the Mariners, where two players just started jawing a little bit. All of a sudden, they gave warnings to both benches, and Kevin Cash came out of the dugout to say, wait, time out. And he got tossed.
Yeah, he got tossed for not leaving the field, though. Like, that was a good ejection.
But
like, you got to leave when they tell you to leave.
Okay, but at the same time, the Yankee player should have been warned or tossed, too. And then their bench, all the Yankees coaches were like, come on, let's go. And yeah. the Tampa pitching coach wanted a part of it, too. Yeah. I would have loved to have seen that unfold.
Yeah, that was I went back and watched that. I caught that, too. And people were, like, criticizing that Cash got ejected and they threw out the wrong guy.
Well, that was said they threw out the wrong guy.
Cash didn't leave the field when they said they needed to leave the field. Like, that was going to be an ejection. Phil Cuzzi was getting crushed yesterday for his strike zone and then that balk that he called against Matt Gage, which is like, he does the same thing every time. Like,
did you see the side-by-side where one was okay and the other wasn't?
It was bizarre. I don't understand it. I'm to the point now, though, that I'm tired of people griping of umpires, that I just want to see the automated strike zone. I've never been an automated strike zone guy, but it's not even the umpires. I'm so annoyed and over people getting mad at the umpires that I want to throw in the automated strike zone to just get over the whining of strike zones that people have.
I've never been an advocate of it because I do like just still having the human element in it and knowing that certain umpires have certain zones and part of that goes into the thinking when you get into prep for games. But I'm with you. That's the apprehension that I have watching a game the minute that I want to be critical of an umpire. Like, there's so much more to it, and then you got to figure out, is he doing it for both teams? Or, you know, and I don't like ever thinking that I'm going to be the homer in that regard.
Yeah.
That I try to refrain from that. And so many people now, because of the resources they have on the internet, to go to the how many calls did they miss? How many runs did it cost us? It gets to be too much.
Yeah, it does. One of the other positives from the texters was Phil Maton. Says he needs to be the seventh inning guy. I'm not going to go that far, but it has been nice to get good Phil Maton again.
Resurrection.
He's been very good. Like, yeah. He's been more. People would say that he's more trustworthy than Montero. People would say he's more trustworthy than Stanek for sure.
Yep.
Would you say he's more trustworthy than Neris?
I don't think so.
Like, what is your circle of trust? Top three in your bullpen right now?
I think it's
Presley,
and it's Abreu.
I would go Abreu first over Presley for me.
I didn't know if we're doing any order. You just said
name your top three. Yeah, you're right. I didn't. But name your top three. Like, who in order? Who do you trust the most? Top three.
You know me. I'm still going to go Presley, Abreu, and then probably Neris.
I go Abreu, Presley. And if this is a high leverage situation, I still can't put Maton in this list. Mm-mm. I don't trust Maton in a high leverage situation. Going Montero third. There, I said it.
I think the reason why I can't put Maton there either in the high leverage, I don't think he has the plus-plus fastball that sometimes, even when you don't have your A stuff, you can get out of jams just by overpowering.
Presley's fastball is not plus-plus either.
No, though. But he's got a plus-plus. I mean, he's got a strikeout pitch. I mean, his curveball is wicked.
Yeah, it is.
And so I don't know that Maton has that pure strikeout pitch that the other guys do, whether it be, you know, overpowering fastball or multiple case in the case of Abreu. Yeah, I can't put him there yet.
Yeah, I'm with you. What was your top three there, Joe?
I think it's Abreu. I think it's Presley 1, Abreu 2, and then 3, I think I go Neris.
Neris.
It's exactly tight, what I said, yeah. Joe. You're on the right team.
Because Phil Maton, they're also, like, they're showing you that they don't necessarily trust him in high leverage situations, it feels like. Like, is he it? I feel like he's not coming in like, the big moments.
Who?
That are Maton.
No, he's not. He's not
yet.
Even close.
Yeah.
Not
even
yet,
close.
But you can see, like, to get in the circle of dust,
yeah.
It's progressive. So they're using him more in better situations. They're using him. It used to be he was still kind of like a glorified mop-up guy.
He's got a 1.00 ERA.
Yeah, but now you can see Dusty using him a little earlier and a little bit more in those leverage situations. Just like it wasn't as abrupt as the way that they just completely threw Ryan Stanek on the scrap heap in the playoffs last year. But you might know the reason why now, because Stanek had a career year in the regular season last year, and this year he looks like they knew what they were doing in the playoffs because they were worried he might blow up. And now I think that we're getting to the point where I think that Stanek has taken down a notch and Maton's starting to take a step up.
I still don't think Maton's past Stanek. Like, if you look at Dusty Baker's, like, pecking order, I think it's pretty easy to tell what it is. Like, Presley's his guy. Like, he's at the top of the list. Abreu has passed Montero. Like, I've noticed a promotion there.
Yep.
Montero's third.
He is third.
Neris is fourth. Stanek is still fifth. And then Maton is sixth after Stanek.
I think it's neck and neck right now. I think
he goes to Stanek in much more high leverage spots. Like, he goes to him in the seventh.
But based
on
the results he's getting out of Stanek, I think that the gap has narrowed significantly to where I think Dusty's getting more and more trust in Maton. That very, very soon, I think we might see a leapfrog there.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind it. Like, Stanek has not looked very good. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Teased this before the break. You have to pick one guy, Blankers, that you have the most trust in to have a good rest of the season. Is it Brandon Belak or is it J.P. France?
I think it's J.P. France.
Is this an easy question?
It seems like it is.
Is this an easy question? Like, it's an automatic slam dunk, J.P. France over Brandon Belak. Is there anybody out there that thinks Brandon Belak, if you gave both guys 20 starts in the bigs, that Belak would be better than France?
I think that there's, you know, the lines are open and everybody can call and give us their feedback. I think the reason why, for me, it's an easy question to answer is because Belak's a guy that's just a guy. He can soak up some innings. He can do some things. But just like the conversation we were having with the bullpen, I don't know that he's got the kind of significant stuff that really can be effective long term. What I saw of J.P. France just in one start was a guy with a 94, 95 mile an hour fastball that when he gets juiced up, he can get it even a little faster than that. But he's got adequate secondary pitches. And the fact that the only issue I had with him was that they weren't stretching him out more in the minors to where he could throw more pitches. But other than that, I liked everything that I saw about him, his competitive fire, the way he kind of could buckle down when he needed to. And I think he's got the opportunity to be about a, you know, like a three-starter, four-starter for some team, for a major league team, which I don't think Belak does.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it is a slam dunk decision that, you know, most people would say France. If there's Belak believers, let us know. 713-780-3776. I like France's stuff more, too. Like, Belak, we've seen, he's kind of more of like a, you know, mop-up, long reliever, kind of a fringe guy between AAA and the bigs. And we've only seen France pitch five innings in his big league career. But I like the stuff. I think it plays more. And I think that if you gave both guys 20 starts in the bigs, I think France would have better numbers.
Yeah, I think unless, like, the Belak family or maybe even the Biggio family are wanting to call in right now.
The Biggios like the Belaks?
Yeah.
I didn't know this.
I didn't either.
Yeah, Craig is the reason why Belak's an Astro.
Was the connection
because,
Notre Dame, Seton Hall?
Because Cavan played with Belak at Notre Dame.
Okay.
And Biggio told the Astros to draft him if there was a point in the draft where they felt comfortable. And then it's like he's like his guy.
Look at Biggio. Biggio bringing in Belak, Bagwell bringing up Abreu.
The Killer Bees are at it again.
Which one's the better GM?
Well, I mean, Belak's not making $18.5 million a year.
So it's Biggio.
It's Biggio.
So we should be listening
the
to
the lesser of two evils.
Team Biggio.
Yeah, I think Bagwell's lost some trust in that front office.
Yeah, so like it's like unless you're
definitely
like
with the fan base.
Unless you're a member of the Belak family, like I think everyone's saying J.P. France.
Yeah, I think so too. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. We got the Friday Luis Garcia news dump that we all expected. What is the plan for the rotation? I know Joe George has an interested name that he likes because he's a big White Sox fan. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. They've added semaglutide to all their different things that they can help you with. And if you're not familiar, it's an FDA-approved way. You could lose up to 6 pounds a week. And if you do the math, it's pretty simple to think you could lose 24 pounds in a month. And it's all FDA-approved, and they can do it right there for you and tell you and explain to you exactly how it works. They can do so many different things to help you on a daily basis. If you're trying to get more energy in your life, if you're trying to recover quicker at the gym or get in on a workout program, they can help you with all those things and so much more. They got two locations to better serve you near downtown Houston, a third coming soon in League City. They take care of everything so that you just do the best you can to take care of you. And it starts by going to ApolloMH.com. Check out all the services they offer and all the things where they might be able to help. And from the boardroom to the weight room to the bedroom, as you get older, you struggle a little bit more. You can't do the things you once were able to do. They can help you get where you need to go. Check them out today and mention my name, Joel Blank. Get a free B12 shot or a free body composition analysis on your first official visit. But basically sign up for an appointment right there online if you see some services you think might help you. And then go in with an open mind. They're going to ask you some tough questions and figure out where you're trying to go. You tell them where you've been struggling and what you'd like to do. They'll put you on a plan that gets you results. They're going to get you where you need to go. They're fantastic people that care about their patients. Tell them I sent you by. They're the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
You're-
You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
I got excited. I saw your quote tweet, Joe George, that the bear is coming back in the summer. I love that show. Thank you, Chef.
That
Thank you,
show Chef. Was so good. Elite.
Really good. Really good show. You up to date with Succession? Did you watch last night's episode?
I just started it.
Okay, I won't give away any spoilers.
No, like I'm on season two.
Oh, okay. Well, I still won't give away any spoilers.
Yeah, please
I'm anti-spoiler.
Thank you.
I don't believe in spoilers at all.
That means you're a good person.
Right. Anybody who spoils things for other people have a bad heart.
Yeah, but anyone that complains about spoilers for like a movie that came out like 20 years ago, you suck as a person.
What's the window? I don't really care about movie spoilers outside of like a year. I don't watch tons of movies
anymore. I think it's like...
Isn't it 7 days?
I think 7 days.
For a movie?
No.
For like an episode of Game of Thrones,
Succession.
So many people like binge watch and like allow a collection to build up.
I understand you're busy, but 7 days to not catch up on a show that you watch.
But why do you have to talk about it?
Because why wouldn't you? A lot of, just like sports, the day after a game, everybody wants to talk about what happened and why. That's why we do what we do.
I don't think you can compare sports to a show.
No, I do. I think like
no
I,
way.
Like peak Game of Thrones, it was the day after.
Yes.
It was like a full recap the day
after. Succession right now. We just watched last night's show. Let's have a full recap right now of Succession last night.
Yeah, but you're the only one that's watched it, so it doesn't
work. People
are
going to be a little upset.
There you go. Like whoever has watched the show that wants to talk about what happened on the show has selfish motives.
No. They can talk about it.
Absolutely.
No, if you're having like a conversation with like two people.
Yeah, but you shouldn't be like within earshot of somebody that might potentially not have watched the show.
That's fair.
Like it's totally different than a sport. Totally different than a game.
It is different in that way, but
absolutely. But I'm excited about The Bear. I'm looking forward to that coming back. It's a really good show. 713-780-ESPN. HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. So Forrest Whitley is hurt. He did not get called up to the Astros, which if a Forrest is always getting hurt, will he ever make his big league debut? Who knows? We also got the Friday news dump about Luis Garcia tearing his UCL. Luis Garcia is going to be out for the season. I was reading some things, Blankers. Mm-hmm. Who was it? It wasn't Heyman. It was the other Nightingale. It was Bob Nightingale. Mm-hmm. Bob Nightingale said he might be gone until 2025.
Like this year and all of next year?
Yes. And Chandler Rome, I think it was in The Athletic, said like best case scenario, all-star game next year. Like they were saying this is like a 12, 14-month timeline.
Why so much different and significantly worse than most other
Maybe
people?
Maybe because he's young and they want to like take care of him make sure he's 100%.
Justin Verlander missed. So he has his Tommy John injury the first game of the season, which is actually like in what, like June because of the pandemic?
Oh, that's right.
And then he doesn't have the surgery right away.
Yeah, he had it like after the season.
Yeah.
Or towards the end of the season.
Like, I think it was in like August. Like they didn't have it right away. They tried to push it off and see like if it would heal on its own, whatever it is. But then he missed the entire next season. Like I think it's like 14 months.
But at that point, that was like, I think he had it later than August. But whatever. Like they're talking about best case scenario.
McCullers,
Luis Garcia, all-star break 2024.
Yeah.
McCullers was about a year.
I don't remember his Tommy John. I don't really remember the timeline on Lance McCullers.
Because, again, younger than the two other guys, and you would think with the way the medical technology and doing Tommy Johns and everything, it's kind of like the ACLs where they've perfected it more and they found ways to speed up the process. That seems excessive.
Yeah. It's a long time.
It's concerning, obviously.
Like, you're gonna have to... It throws a wrinkle in terms of roster management next year.
I think part of it is in terms of like the swelling and everything.
You can't have the surgery right away.
Because he hasn't had the surgery yet.
Yeah.
So it's like, so it just, until like your, you know, whatever the swelling or whatever the issues is are gone, you can't have the surgery. And that's when your timeline starts. You know, the other thing too with the Astros is that even though like this sucks for Luis Garcia, like you still go into next season with Framber Valdez, Christian Javier, Hunter Brown, and Jose Urquidy. Lance McCullers, you have your five.
But France might work his way into that conversation. Yeah,
France. So, like, what's the rush on Luis Garcia?
There's not, but Joe, think about that. Just everything that we just said, right? And even if he has swelling right now, say he has the surgery in June, okay? He should still be available next year in, like, July. Not another year on top of that July.
Yeah, the 2025.
Next year, July. 2025 is excessive.
That was Nightingale.
Yeah, Rome said, usually wrong about everything.
Rome said all-star break. timeline.
Yeah, that I think All-Star break.
Next year, All-Star break.
That makes sense.
So, I mean, because like, it's not like it's you can't be like Bryce Harper, who's playing with like a robot arm right now.
Right.
On like the quickest return ever from Tommy John.
And it's much
like,
different.
Don't you dare much ask for different. Extra time to put that brace on.
And it, I didn't notice that. But it's much different.
You didn't like, see that was a big controversy.
I didn't. I don't really care about Philadelphia Philly baseball.
It's just, it was a full like Major League Baseball discussion because he wanted more time to put his brace on when he got to first base. And they were like, no one gets any extra time for anything. If it's your equipment, you can do it during the allotted time. Or you're not getting it done, and they, Philly fans and the organization, everybody lost their mind.
Cool. Drew Gilbert got called up today, too, to Corpus Christi.
Bye, guys.
I was looking at, I think it's possible we see him this year. I would still gun to my head, say we don't see him this year, but I definitely think it's in play. I think it would probably require injury and poor production for him to get called up, or maybe even a trade. When you look at Alex Bregman, he was drafted and made his minor league debut at 21, and then he was with the Astros the next year at age 22. Drew Gilbert, now, look, he wasn't a top five pick like Alex Bregman was, but he was a first rounder. He made his minor league debut last year at the age of 21. Now, the injury didn't do him any favors, and now he's 22 years old. So I wouldn't put it out of the realm of possibility that Drew Gilbert makes his major league debut this year.
I think it's next year. I think next year is Drew Gilbert's year, but he's definitely on the fast track. I mean, Joe and I were talking about it when we were talking about the fact that the Hooks had the bug eyes, and everybody was like, does this mean that Altuve is going for a rehab start? Because he's obviously on the fast track.
They say he could start a rehab this week.
This week, yeah. So that's a big deal. But when it wasn't the bug eyes for that, it was the fact that they were bringing Gilbert up already. You're like, ooh, boy, Dana Brown wasn't kidding. He sees something in this kid that he wants to see as soon as possible, and they are trying to fast-track him through the minor leagues. And if you look at the Mariners starter yesterday, it's not uncommon these days for guys to take the jump from Double A and even Luis Garcia right to the bigs. Those are pitchers. I get it. But
he never pitched in Double A.
But
Garcia went straight from Single A.
I thought he did pitch one or two games
for
Double A.
No, he was the COVID year. He never had an appearance in Double A.
Regardless, with Gilbert, I think that they obviously see something in him that says we want to see him at the big league level as soon as possible. So I'm not gonna rule it out and say even for September call-ups they give him a taste and see what he can do. And then if the playoffs come around and he's figured it out or he looks like he can do it, they might even give him an opportunity.
I still think it's next year, not this year, but I wouldn't rule out the possibility of it. It would probably require injury, poor play, because like the irony of the whole situation is that like center field's the one position you're getting pretty good production at. Yep. So I don't. Like, there's no urgency there. Now, they could make a trade. They could make a splash, something like that. I don't think that. I think. Here's a good question. Is it more likely that Jake Meyers or Drew Gilbert is traded?
Oh, Drew Gilbert's not getting traded.
So, Jake Meyers.
Yep.
Jake Meyers.
I think it's Jake Meyers, too.
I mean, it's so funny. Center field for the last year has been this, like, and really since Springer left, has been this, like, controversial position. Mm-hmm. It is now the deepest position in the organization.
Yeah.
Like, you have Jake Meyers, Chaz McCormick. Justin Dearden had back-to-back grand slams. He had five home runs.
He's probably more of a corner outfielder, but has the ability to play there.
He's playing center right now.
I think it's because they want position flexibility. Yeah. He's not you have Drew really a center fielder by trade.
You have Drew Gilbert. Like all of a sudden, center field, like you're, I don't know if any of them were superstar players, but it's deep.
And I'll tell you what they're going to do if Dana Brown obviously believes in him the way he does. We saw it if you saw the documentary on Jeter. His first year when they knew that next year was going to be his year, he was like on the taxi squad, so he was on the bench and experiencing the playoffs. Pena did it here the year 2 years ago where they wanted him to get a taste of it and to feel what it's like to be in the big leagues in the playoffs. And definitely I would expect Drew Gilbert to be in that dugout like on the taxi squad during the playoffs because I believe that next year it's full-blown his time.
What is the plan for the rotation now that they gave us the Luis Garcia news dump on Friday that he has to have TJ? Because right now you have France and Belak as your 4 and 5 starters. Dana Brown also mentioned they're not getting Jose Urquidy back to like the All-Star break, which is like, okay, that's a lot bigger timeline than I thought. I know that Lance McCullers threw a bullpen the other day. He's still probably, I don't know, at least a month out. Like, I'd be shocked if we see him before the middle of June. So, like, what's the plan for the rotation until Lance McCullers, let's assume middle of June, Jose Urquidy, let's assume the middle of July, because that's what Dana Brown said.
I think that for the time being, I think the 5 spot might end up being by committee. They sent Blanco down, and one of the things they said they want to do is get him completely stretched out and see what he does as a starter as opposed to being in the pen where he started the season. But I think that I think if France does anything close to what he did in the first outing and he starts to get more stretched out, he's your 4. And so I think that right now you've got Javier and you've got Fromber and you've got Brown, and then you add France to the mix. Those are the four guys I believe you can rely on. And then you're going to go by committee, whether it be Bielak or, you know, they start trying some other guys, depending on whose arms are healthy and who they want to see. You'll get a guy here or there. I don't think Bielak, if he keeps pitching the way he's pitching, is going to wow anybody enough to say he's got it. He's got the five spot solidified until. So I think you'll maybe see more by committee for that five spot, but I think the first four are pretty in stone.
I don't think we'll see a trade coming up until like at least July, quite frankly. A couple of people are starting to look at the starting pitcher market, but everybody's only played in like, you know, less than 40 games, so I don't really see anybody making a trade yet.
But Dana Brown even mentioned it. If you're the White Sox and you've lost 10 or you had a 10 game losing streak, you look like you're just fledgling in nowhere land, and you know Giolito, they've already basically said they're not going to bring back.
Right.
I think there's going to be teams knocking on their door.
But if you're the White Sox, why wouldn't you wait until demand is higher in July?
Well, I think you're going to start kicking the tires. I think there'll be teams that are already going to start calling them.
Sure.
I'm not saying a deal's going to get done. You're right. I mean, you play the market. If you're going to have a guy that, you know, sought after, you have to play the market. But I think the Astros should at least see what it's going
to
take.
Yeah. Dana Brown mentioned it's hard to make trades at this point because it's still so early in the year. You don't really see that until the summer months, really July. 713-780-3776. C.J. Stroud, probably the day one starter for the Houston Texans at the quarterback position. Who will we compare C.J. Stroud to the most of this rookie quarterback class? 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 15th through the 28th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.